Maybe you watch that mass for a million people on a highway that's been freed of traffic in Philadelphia today. I would hate to be on the Deacons Communion Committee preparing for that communion service. Or maybe you saw images of his lunch with homeless people in Washington, D.C., or his visit to a small school in New York City, or to a prison in Pennsylvania. Maybe you noticed his contact with disabled persons all along the way. The mother who brought her disabled son so lovingly in hopes of seeing the Pope, when he stopped and he went across and went to them and touched him and prayed for him with his mother in tears. There was also a carnivalesque atmosphere about it all, wasn't there? With Pope caps and T-shirts, abundant and souvenir stands and Pope-themed food. You want a Pope hot dog? I found one online store, by the way, that is selling a musical Pope-mobile, if any of you would like one, a little model. It's marked down from $105 to $89. If any of you want to know the website, I'll give it to you after church. CatholicToTheMax.com has more serious stuff, but also sells a I Heart Pope Francis bumper sticker, or for the tweeter fans in our midst, a hashtag Love Like Francis bumper sticker, or just a little oval one that just says Pope, kind of like you'd have the initials for Norway on your bumper. Emoji faces of the Pope kind of showed up on sticks that people were raising in celebration of his coming. And there were some things that were in a little poorer taste even than those. Having fun with all of this, Stephen Colbert, himself a devout Catholic, devoted an episode of his new late-night show to the visit of the Pope and to Catholicism in America. He began with these flashy graphics, you might have seen them, calling it the Tour de Francis. Humblefest 2016. But then recognizing that the glitz didn't well represent Francis's acts of humility, Colbert took a simple piece of cardboard out from under his desk and a magic marker and just wrote on it, "Welcome, Frank." Welcome, Frank. The leader of over a billion Roman Catholics in the world at a time of extraordinary change, here he comes, shifting the tone and in some cases also the content of his church's social witness, and not without controversy. How can you forget him when right after he was elevated into his position, he went to a prison and he washed the feet of men and women? That's why I chose the story of Jesus washing the disciples' feet for our text this morning as a reminder to us of the power of humility. Francis has called Christians to a new engagement with the poor and the marginalized and the oppressed. And here he comes with an invitation in hand to offer the first address that a pope has ever given to a joint session of the U.S. Congress, and with an invitation in hand to speak to the United Nations on the occasion of its 70th anniversary, at a time when that body is reshaping its priorities, and with a theology and a view of Christ's vision in hand for all of our society that seems to cut across lines between conservative and liberal, religious and secular, Western and Eastern, Northern and Southern. He is the first pope from the American continent, and he has reached out to Protestants in an unprecedented kind of way. Whatever we think of specific things that he says or does, I don't know if anyone of us can deny his impact or his thoughtfulness. One can't easily deny his sincerity or his humility or the authority that he has developed in a short time. religious and non-religious people alike seem fascinating. Here's one thing that I see in all of this, and just me. I think that whether we are religious or not, we are so thirsty in our culture for words of moral weight that are uplifting and not downgrading, that promote peace and offer hope. We're so thirsty for words that lift us into something more important than who wins or who loses, and that give a reason for us to want more for ourselves and for each other than what the latest commercials tell us we should want. We're so thirsty for careful thought that goes deeper than the kind of pre-processed, politically obsessed, and emotionally manipulative entertainment that so often passes these days for public conversation about things that matter. And here he comes, this soft-spoken man in a Fiat 500, often refusing the grand vestments of his office, to offer us the kind of words we're thirsting for, and to remind us, Catholic, Protestant, and people of other faiths as well, that there is, in fact, a better way to be in the world as people of faith than what we've too often settled for. Now, neither he nor his church are perfect by any means, and I don't mean to imply that they are. Only the Lord whom we serve is perfect. But there may yet be in this papacy a word of God for our time. In the beginning of his address to Congress, Francis asked for dialogue. He raised up three groups of Americans in particular with whom he wants to dialogue. He spoke of working people who, as he said, in their own quiet way sustain the life of society. These are people, I think, who too often get lost in statistics and systems and distractions of just getting by. And he spoke of the elderly, whose wisdom and whose needs are often forgotten. He praised their volunteerism, your volunteerism, and the way in which many retired persons and seniors in our society give of themselves, give of yourselves and your time to help others. And he spoke of young people, about whom he seems to speak in almost every address that he gives. He wants a dialogue with young people who are, as he said, working to realize their great and noble aspirations, who are not led astray by facile proposals, and who face difficult situations, often as a result of the immaturity on the part of many adults. I think that this call for dialogue is a remarkable call to us to suspend our answers just long enough to listen again to others and to be open to new questions and new ideas. And he asked us that as we do this, we remember both our human responsibility to each other and the divinely given transcendent dignity of each and every person. Wow. And then in a beautifully Catholic kind of way, Francis went on to say that we need better examples of how to live faithfully. He seemed to be reminding us that as fascinating as the great celebrities of our day may appear, whether in politics or in business or in entertainment or anything else that grabs our attention, we need more than celebrities. We need saints. We need people who are willing to sacrifice for the good, whether it makes them famous or not. We need to remember such people from the past. We need to discover such people in the present, and we need to model our lives on them. Francis named four American examples, two Protestant and two Catholic. Lincoln was one who struggled to find a way through a murky time to a future of freedom for all people. He used Lincoln's example to challenge religious fundamentalism and other forms of extremism. He challenged what he calls the self-righteous thinking that is overly simplistic and that sees only good or evil, or if you will, the righteous and sinners. So against ideological or political purity, he called for hope and healing, for peace with justice, for cooperation and respect for differences in ways that value the voice of faith in society. And he named Martin Luther King Jr., who served a vision of liberty that refused to exclude some for the sake of others. In saying this, he praised dreams which awaken what is deepest and truest in the life of a people. And he reminded us of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In a word, he said, if we want security, let us give security. If we want life, let us give life. If we want opportunities, let us provide opportunities. The yardstick we use for others will be the yardstick which time will use for us, he said. And so he also raised up the American Catholic Dorothy Day, who was the co-founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. And he called us to follow her example, to promote a culture of care by combating poverty, restoring dignity to the excluded, and at the same time protecting nature. And so lastly, he spoke of a controversial and fascinating 20th century monk named Thomas Merton. Some of you know him or his writings. If you don't, I recommend them to you. From Merton, Francis said that we can learn the capacity of dialogue and openness to God. Inspired by Merton, he called for prayer, for work to heal the past, for new dialogues between divided groups, and for all of this to be done with courage and daring. He called us to be less interested in possessing spaces for ourselves than initiating efforts to meet with others for the sake of peace. These are his American models for us to consider, each born of Christian faith. You may have your own in mind. And so in the end, I believe that this is all a call for us to sacrifice, both for each other and for the greater good, for the health of our families, for people who are excluded, for the young and all that they face, no matter their color, their citizenship, their wealth, or their potential. And so here I make my own appeal. Isn't this, in some way or another, what each one of us deep inside really want? even if we don't know how to talk about it or how it always works. No matter our circumstance or our station in life, don't we want to live a noble life? To live for something that is greater than ourselves? And to bring our families or others we love along into that kind of living. It can be hard, no doubt. We will do it and experience tragedy and difficulty along the way. For we who are just struggling to get through the day, it can be hard to rise above what's right in front of our faces. For we who are overwhelmed by responsibilities or challenges, it can be hard to find time or energy to look up and beyond our lives. For we who've done well and in this moment enjoy some comfort, it can actually be hard for us sometimes to remember that the truly good and godly life cannot be bought. And yet we also know that there is joy in this way of living our faith, even when it makes us uncomfortable. We owe that kind of joy to each other, don't you think? We certainly owe that kind of joy to our children. We owe them a faith that is about more than refuge. We owe them a faith that is about adventure, about a love that's worth giving their lives to. When preaching to a cathedral congregation in Philadelphia, Francis called this the great legacy that we have received and are called to enrich and pass on. I'd call it the great gift. To that same cathedral congregation in Philly, he told the story of Catherine Drexel, a wealthy woman raised in the churches of Philadelphia. When still young, in 1887, after already losing both her father and mother and stepmother, she became concerned for the lack of workers to assist in relief efforts for Native and African Americans. She met with her sisters with the Pope, Pope Leo XIII, actually, and she asked him what the church can do more. She said, the church has to do more. And she heard this in reply. What about you? What are you going to do? And as Frances told the story, those words changed her life. She returned home, took religious vows, actually, and gave her fortune and her life to service. And so, echoing another theme that Presbyterians love, Frances concluded, every Christian man and woman, by virtue of baptism, has received a mission. Each one of us needs to respond as best we can. What about you? The world is so very thirsty for a hopeful word. Will our lives speak that word?